Hey everyone, it's me, Jacqueline, and I'm here to tell you personally that this is the last episode for Chain Reaction. I'm leaving TechCrunch to pursue a new opportunity, which I hope you all can join me on. And if you want to keep up with me for future updates, my Twitter or X profile is Jack Melinick, JacqMelinick. And in the meantime, I'm sure my colleagues from TechCrunch will continue to carry the crypto torch from here on out. I appreciate all of you for listening in, and thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming along on this journey with us. And a huge, huge thank you to the podcast producer, Maggie Stamets, and editor Cal Keller, as well as Henry Picovet, for making this dream a successful reality for the past 2 years. Hopefully this is just a see you later, but for now, I'll say bye. Hey everyone, it's Jacqueline Melinick. Welcome to Chain Reaction, a show that unpacks and dives deep into the latest trends, drama, and news, breaking things down block by block for the crypto curious. This year, we're doing monthly series diving into different topics and themes in crypto. Last month was NFTs, and this month we're focusing on blockchains integrating AI. We're speaking to a number of founders and startups about how they're looking at the two technologies, what are the best ways to bring AI on chain, and the benefits that are yet to come from it. Hope you enjoy. Today's guest is Scott Dykstra, the CTO and co-founder of Space & Time. Before diving into Web3, Scott spent almost 8 years at the cloud analytics and data platform Teradata, working on those two categories. And throughout the years, he had roles like a senior architect, director of cloud solutions, and worked his way up to VP of Teradata's global cloud. As for Space & Time, the company aims to be a verifiable compute layer for Web3 that scales zero-knowledge proofs or ZK-proofs on a decentralized data warehouse. I know that was a lot of words, but basically, ZK-proofs are a cryptographic action used to prove that something about a piece of data is real without basically showing the origin data itself. And I'm sure Scott and I will get into this too. Space & Time has indexed data both off-chain and on-chain from Ethereum, Bitcoin, Polygon, Sui, Say, Avalanche, and Aptos, and is adding support for more chains to power the future of AI and blockchain as well. With all that said, we think Scott is the perfect guest to wrap up our blockchain and AI series this month. So Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jacqueline.
Yeah.
We're super happy to be here.
No, super happy to have you. So I mentioned in the intro that you basically made a pivot, maybe, from Teradata, which has been around for a long time, and it was more of a Web2 type of company with cloud solutions and so on. What kind of drew you to the Web3 world?
Definitely a pivot.
Okay, good.
Pivot from taking the internet's data and locking away in these cloud corporate-owned black boxes with, you know, half a petabyte of data each from major Fortune 500 companies to thinking about ways to provide data to smart contracts. Same vertical, you could argue, analytics, data, but a much different purpose, right? Decentralized, community-owned versus corporate-owned, FANG-owned. That's exciting. It's been a blast.
Well, who kind of inspired you to get into crypto and Web3, like to leave that like black box, so to speak, and go into something that maybe is more open?
Yeah, this was early 2021. I was playing around with smart contracts. Like everyone, I'd been degenning into crypto through the pandemic.
Right.
And that, you know, buying crypto led to wanting to build in crypto and playing around with smart contracts. And we were kind of shocked. I say we, my co-founder and I, Nate. We were kind of shocked that smart contracts had no access to data at all. Like a smart contract on Ethereum can't even ask a question as basic as show me the total volume of Jacqueline's transactions from her wallet. Like that's a very simple question to ask. And we came from like the corporate analytic background. And so we were like, wait, smart contracts can't ask any queries? Nate was advising the executive team at Chainlink, the CEO of Chainlink, Sergey Nazarov at the time, and kind of helping the team work on go-to-market. And we were thinking, okay, Chainlink does something very powerful, right? It provides data to smart contracts, allows price feed, like aggregated feeds of token prices to fuel DeFi and lending. And we thought, okay, that's a stepping stone. Like that's pioneering. Let's take that a step further. What if we could connect like an actual database to a smart contract? Allow smart contracts to ask much more complex questions. That led to Space & Time.
Okay. We had Chainlink on and Sergey. So hopefully our audience remembers them. And if not, they could go back and listen to that episode. We could link it in the show notes too.
But was he wearing his trademark blue flannel.
No, but he did have, like, you know, the Chainlink background. You got to rep your company, you know?
Absolutely.
But I have a few questions here on that front. But when I tried to explain space and time in as simplest terms as I could in the intro, I'm wondering if you could just do it in a better way for our audience and give, like, a brief overview of what it's doing. You kind of gave some tidbits before on what you're building, but I'll open the floor to you.
I appreciate that. And I'll admit this is an area that even we struggle with sometimes, is doing something this complicated is a little difficult to boil down to a left curve narrative, right? Space and Time indexes data from every major chain into what looks like a traditional SQL database. But we've invented very fast ZK proofs to allow smart contracts or any client really to query that database and not just get back a query result, like what's the total volume of Jacqueline's wallet's transactions, but to get a proof in addition to that query result, to be darn confident that we did not manipulate the underlying data, we did our indexing correctly, and the actual query execution is correct. And folks say, well, okay, well, what does that have to do with AI? That's cool, but that seems very helpful to smart contracts. Sure, I can build more sophisticated smart contracts that query activity from their own chain, other chains, or off-chain. What's the AI play here? Well, you know, as we incubated this zero-knowledge proof for SQL databases, we realized the same cryptography can be used for vector search databases. Vector search databases are just simply another type of database, really more for data for LLMs. They do Google search style retrievals of data rather than very structured Excel spreadsheet style querying of data. And one single database can do both, right? You could have a Space and Time is a ZK proven database that can return vector embedding searches, searching, hey, find similar wallets to Jacqueline's, as well as very structured retrieval. Show me the total volume of Jacqueline's transactions. Ultimately, LLMs have no memory. They have no context. They have to be provided all of that in retrieval augmented generation, you know, writing prompts that query from the database to add context to a prompt. And AI agents trading on chain soon, or transacting on chain, or building on chain, will need context about the chain. They'll need, just like smart contracts need context, LLMs need context of what the heck is happening on chain. That's where Space and Time comes in.
Okay. And so, kind of like sum that up, how does these data warehouses work in Web3 compared to the Web2 world?
Sure. In Web2, it's all about sort of getting as much data as you can co-located together in one single location, some cloud data center deployed by Azure or AWS or Google, right? And we're talking hundreds of terabytes in one location to be joined together so that, you know, Walmart can give you its next best offer, or Southwest Airlines can reprice your flight, as an example. In Web3, it's more about self-custody, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I, as a user of the chain, sort of authorize my data to be used by dApps on that chain, right? And giving users and users control of that and their ability to sort of delete the data or hide the data. Like, with zero-knowledge proofs, a smart contract could ask Space and Time, hey, is Scott's credit score greater than 600? Give me an answer back, but don't reveal Scott's credit score. Don't tell me Scott's credit score. Just give me the answer and prove that you actually looked up Scott's credit score. But just tell me, is it greater than 600? That's an example where I can keep self-custody of my private information, but still make it available to the chain.
Right. Well, can't I be like, is it greater than 650, but lower than 670? You know, like.
And then maybe me as a consumer, I don't give you authorization to make that kind of request.
Okay, fair. Decentralized data is kind of a evolution of data transparency, like what we were just talking about, and storage. Has there been other evolutions like this in the past, or is this like a fairly new concept?
I started with self-custody, but I'd almost say the even bigger evolution, arguably, is verification of data. You asked, hey, what's the difference between Web2, boring centralized data warehouses in the cloud versus like a decentralized data warehouse? And I said self-custody, but actually the real answer is verification of compute, proving that the tables inside of that database have not been tampered by the owner of that database, proving that the computation against that data, like the verifiable queries that we run, have been run correctly, and that the people operating that database aren't manipulating things inside it, manipulating stock prices, token prices, manipulating their reserves, their assets. Like, if you think about financial records, they can be easily manipulated, and they are manipulated, and we see that all the time.
Right.
So that's a big change. Other evolutions were kind of going to the cloud. Like, I was there on the ground, feet on the ground, while everyone moved these massive monolithic data centers that were previously on bare metal in Walmart's own data center in Las Vegas or something, or Southwest, or I'm using those examples. Lifting and shifting them to AWS and Azure was a very painful experience, and I had to lead that for a while in my career. It was a good learning experience, But that was a monumental shift in the way we do business. Like, I don't think people realize that little devs building little apps moving to the cloud is quick and easy. Moving an entire petabyte worth of data to the cloud is painful.
And this isn't like actual physical movements, right? This is like...
You know what's crazy? That's a very good question. You thought I would say, of course not, right?
I don't know.
I've literally put large SSDs, like big old hard drives, on a truck and shipped them to a data center in Las Vegas. Like shipping a pair, like literally an arm truck with hard drives driving across the country.
Damn. Okay. Well,
and that's where you say, well, Scott, why? That seems unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Well, think about how fast your internet is in your house right now.
Yeah.
What do you get? You know, a gigabit or something? Try to move a petabyte over that gigabit. It would take like weeks.
Right.
So if you want the data tomorrow, you got to put it on a truck.
That makes sense. I think also something I wanted to ask you about is you were talking about like manipulation of data and like the previous worlds or like problems with data transparency is what I'm picking up from this. Is that true that in the past people would manipulate data to better benefit maybe their business or cloud services or whatever it may be? And you feel like this is maybe a move towards like more transparency in a way that like you can't manipulate it?
Yeah, I mean, not to get cryptographically religious here, but we saw that during the FTX collapse, didn't we?
Right.
Of an organization that had some brand trust that we all, like I had my personal life savings in FTX. I trusted them as a brand, manipulating their books and showing investors their books, but they're really making a query to a database for their financial records and they're manipulating that query, or at least manipulating the records in their database, right?
Yeah.
And we see that way more often than just the FTX collapse, especially outside of cryptocurrency. We heard stories of Wells Fargo a year or two ago creating, what, 13 million accounts that were fake or something. It happens all the time. And, you know, there's an incentive for financial institutions to want to manipulate their records. There's a real reason you would want to do that as a banker or as a financial institution. So we see it all the time. And then it becomes more problematic in Web3, where the downstream effects of changing the price of Tesla stock might mint some tokenized equities on chain that are then traded at the wrong price. And people can essentially print money by doing that, as an example.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And I feel like if FTX, going back to that example, was either a hybrid of decentralized or just fully decentralized, like that would have been something you could have seen that it wasn't actually accurate, right?
Yeah. And you're starting to see Web3 projects that are now beginning to give proof of reserves. You know, centralized exchanges, I should say, more importantly.
Chainlink was one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And Chainlink's helping facilitate that. Proof of reserves is an interesting concept where I ACH wire transfer my personal wealth to a centralized exchange, to their bank partner. And then they prove to the Web3 community that uses them that they actually are making the purchases of Ethereum and Bitcoin that they promised us we would, right? I transfer some money. I say, hey, buy Bitcoin for me. And then what would happen in the past is they wouldn't buy Bitcoin for you, right? That was the whole issue. Now you're starting to see exchanges provide on-chain proofs that they're actually buying the tokens that they're saying they are.
And obviously, topic of the day is blockchain and AI. So I would love to know, how do you kind of think about this when it comes to decentralized data and AI together? Where does that fall in place?
To be fair, our focus is so much more on verification and proof than it is actual like community owned and operated AI. Mm-hmm. I think there's value in both, to be clear, but our focus is more on the former than the latter. The value in decentralized AI is like obviously removing monopolies. Like there's terabytes of training data that go into a large LLM. And if those terabytes of training data are owned by one place, centralized monopoly, it can be pretty problematic. And a lot of folks I'm sure who have been on this podcast have talked about the problems with that. What I'll talk about is the verification of the data. We've been working for almost 9 months now alongside our partners at Microsoft around a verifiable AI strategy. Like, how do we end-to-end prove to a litigator, like a judge, a lawyer, or to a user of the LLM, like a customer, that the LLM was trained responsibly on data that wasn't copyrighted, data that doesn't include sensitive IP, like sensitive private user data? And that goes beyond just training, right? That also applies to RAG, retrieval augmented generation. Like when you send a prompt to the LLM, you often retrieve context from a database that's injected into the prompt. Like if I'm asking an AI agent framework to go, you know, buy Ethereum on my behalf when Ethereum dips 15%, well, how does the AI agent framework even know when Ethereum dips 15%? You'll have to provide data to it. So we're working through different ways to use ZK proofs to not only ensure that the training data was collected responsibly and hasn't been tampered and was maintained responsibly. And then also the usage of the LLM in flight can get context from the database that's accurate and verifiable and correct. Like if we tell an agent framework the price of Ethereum has dropped 15%, which check your phone, maybe has today, yeah. Let's be darn sure we're accurate.
But how do you kind of find that happy medium or the quote unquote right architecture to manage this data and make sure that it is accurate? Like, is it just, I guess, because it is like a data warehouse, you are getting like a lump sum of so much information that hopefully they like build on top of each other?
Yeah, a couple things. One is the nice thing is with this new paradigm of decentralization, we don't have to keep all the data in one place like we used to 10 years ago when I was trying to move things to the cloud. We can now distribute a community-owned, community-operated node network that kind of persists the data across the entire network globally. But that helps with like capacity, right? That helps us bring on capacity quickly from the community. But more importantly, I think from an architecture standpoint, not everything needs to be ZK proven all the time. Shouldn't you as like kind of a consumer, as a user, as a dev on top of this technology, choose what needs to be proven versus what do you kind of like, hey, I optimistically trust XYZ,
right,
but I need ABC to be cryptographically proven. For example, if I'm just saying, hey, find me all NFTs that look and feel and have like a similar community to Pudgy Penguins, does that really need to be cryptographically proven? Like, come on. I'm sure there's a reasonable, like,
right,
optimistic approach to just retrieving all NFT projects that are similar to Pudgy Penguins. Mm-hmm. And no one's asking you to verify that with ZK proofs on chain. However, if you say, hey, I'm about to move a very large whale amount of money on chain, I'm going to go, you know, purchase $100 million of Solana, but it needs to meet these criteria and it only needs to be during this time of day. And, you know, regulators are going to watch, and then that would need to be cryptographically proven. And we need to be darn confident that we did that correctly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like for smaller, more perhaps silly things, you don't really need like a 1,000,000% verification. But when it does come to a lot at play, whether money or just for a business or whatever it may be, like, yeah, I agree with you that it 100% has to be verified and like make sure it executes properly.
It kind of has a lot to do with whether there's an incentive for bad actors to want to manipulate things, right? Anytime there's a higher incentive for a hacker or a bad actor or an inside job to occur where people would want to manipulate data, manipulate prices, manipulate their books, manipulate their finances, manipulate on-chain aggregated information about staking, yield, anything where there's money involved, there's often an incentive for people want to manipulate data to get that money. And that's where ZK proofs come in. And arguably, they do add overhead, right? Like adding ZK proofs to these kinds of data retrievals slow down the data retrievals by often a second or two, sometimes more, and they add a little bit of cost, but it's worth it.
Yeah. I guess on that note too, like with bad actors in the space, I'm sure you've seen plenty of them. I have too. But as you're building Space and Time, has there been any?
No more main characters. Well, we've had enough main characters.
I'm sure they're all developing their like character arc right now as we speak. But as you're building out Space and Time, has there been any like roadblocks or challenges that have come up that you really weren't expecting as a result of like bad actors in the space or just kind of like undeveloped infrastructure maybe? I guess those are two sides, but
I'm laughing because we've had a lot of civil attacks over like
you guys have been busy.
Yeah, like civil attacks across the board of, I don't know, kids in Vietnam that are like creating 100 wallets to run as many queries as they possibly can for free and kind of take advantage of our network. But I wouldn't even call that bad acting. I'd call that hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's hard to anticipate and see that the ways that people are going to want to manipulate like DeFi, that's what I'm most concerned about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're powering AI agents with data to transact on chain or directly providing query results to a smart contract that facilitates on-chain loans or on-chain swaps or on-chain LPing, you name it. That's where attackers are going to live, right? There's a huge, huge incentive to try to get inside of Space and Time, change the price history of Solana, for example, and then affect downstream DeFi protocols that rely on Space and Time to provide that data accurately and cryptographically proven. The beauty is, if someone were to do such a good job hacking that they were somehow I don't think this is possible, but somehow able to breach our quote unquote database mm-hmm. and change rows of data that will get caught on chain during verification. The beauty is the whole point of these ZK proofs is we actually invite people to come hack the database saying, go for it. Like literally just go change some data. It's not going to help because when a contract on chain query space and time saying, give me the price of Solana, even if it's manipulated in the database, the proof verification catches that. Thank goodness. So we'll discover when people make these breaches or when people try to manipulate things. The question is like how, you know, you can never anticipate the creative ways people will try to make money.
Yeah. Do you have bug bounty programs kind of like get ahead of the curve?
Yeah. And that's really like the next probably 3 months of work for us is as we open source the entire protocol, which we're about to do any day now, combined with a pretty sizable, pretty hefty budget for audits on the contracts, audits on the ZK circuit, and then bug bounties with a couple different platforms.
Cool. Scott, we're going to take a quick break before we go into the rapid fire segment. And we are back. Now it's time for our rapid fire segment where Scott answers some of my questions and hopefully we get some quick answers. To start, what is a way you would describe space and time in present day? In a few words or less.
A database of all of Web3's data.
Okay. And what would be a phrase you would hope describes it in a couple years' time?
The only database that people don't have to trust.
Okay. What is your favorite crypto term?
Restaking.
Okay. All right. Which blockchains interest you most right now?
Very interested in ZK Sync. We just did a big partnership announcement with them. We are building on ZK Sync. And what's interesting about them is just very, very fast, very, very affordable, cheap, efficient ZK proofs, which we need right now. Like we need a ZK rollup that's fast and actually works. I'm also very interested in a number of like EigenLayer AVSs and, you know, all the restaking things on EigenLayer. And finally, I'm very excited about like the future of Ethereum scaling. L2s, rollups, how we make Ethereum actually work. Because I don't like paying $300 of gas every time I try to send a friend some money.
Nope, definitely not. And I'm not paying $300 in gas fees.
No way. The memes are good too. Finally, I'll say lastly, the meme coin craze right now has me laughing.
Yeah, no, same. On that note, I asked which blockchains interest you the most right now. What about Web2 companies?
What the heck is Web2?
We've talked about it in previous episodes. They know.
Yeah, Web2 companies like Snowflake is interesting. That's kind of a leader in the Web2 data warehousing space. And then it's been interesting to watch the advancement of like defense tech. I'm not like into that at all, but that wasn't ever a thing that was cool at any point in time. And it's kind of like created its own vertical now in Web2.
Okay, I'm going to check that out. Lastly, Scott, what is your biggest concern for the future of AI and blockchain?
Very good question. Can I elaborate?
Sure. And then we'll get out of the rapid fire. Go ahead.
All right. The TLDR is I'm very concerned that AI is not really verifiable. Like space and time verifies the data that's context provided to the LLM mm-hmm. or provided to the generative AI model. And that we can verify because we're really just verifying that data sets haven't been manipulated and that access to that database is correct. But I'm pretty concerned that we're not really efficiently ever going to be able to verify that an LLM was executed correctly. Like, believe me, there are teams working on it right now that are very well funded, that are really sharp, that are building like ZK proofs for machine learning, ZK proofs for the neural network, ZK proofs for the LLM. But they take 2 years to prove, right? I'm saying that jokingly, but it really is like a 18-day proof time, which to me is so far from practical.
Right. It's like a further.
Yeah, it's visionary, but I don't... How far out do you want to look? You know, like, can you even think 10 years out? Lastly, I'll wrap with this, that the next question should be, okay, well, Scott, like, if you're worried that AI itself, like the actual models won't be able to be verified, why does that matter? Like, isn't it good enough just to make sure the data is correct that you're providing to the model? Well, the model operator can tamper with things, can tamper with the weights. They can add system instructions to their LLM to do things that are problematic or maybe not make the crypto trade you want your AI agent to make. So that becomes extremely problematic when you already have so many bad actors trying to manipulate things on chain. Imagine them also manipulating an LLM to manipulate you.
It's like the Spider-Man meme where they're like pointing at each other. Okay, maybe more on an optimistic twist.
Sure.
What do you think will be the biggest development then for AI and blockchains, let's say in the next year or so? Because we got to think a little more near term.
Man, Okay. I see a bifurcation of two areas of product market fit. And man, we need more product market fit. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, right now crypto is like the world's greatest casino and the world's greatest like composable finance machine, which is amazing. That's good product market fit. We need that. But we need more. We need something beyond composable finance or self-custodied finance. And the PMF will be bifurcated between being the antithesis to deepfakes and the antithesis to like watermarking content to understand where it came from, who made it, is it real, is it generated, is the article that Jacqueline wrote, did it actually come from Jacqueline?
It did.
Or did like...
But I know what you're saying, yes. Yeah.
I believe it did, but someday you're going to have to watermark it. And so that day is soon. Like you're probably 3 years out from having to watermark all your content with your own private key, your employer's private key.
Right.
And that's here. And blockchain, ironically, is the solution. Thank goodness. The other bifurcation, like the other PMF that I see is agents will primarily need to transact on chain. When I say agents, I mean like your AI personal assistant, you know, your DeFi trading bot, your personal software engineer. Like when you leave for the day and tell your little AI agent friend, hey, go build me an app. And when I come home from work, I better see that app ready to go.
It's like, yes, sir.
It's going to need to primarily, you got it. Happy to.
Yeah.
Give me one moment. They're going to need to primarily transact on chain. They cannot really, you can't give them your credit card information and have them, and the payments channels like the Stripes of the world won't allow AI agents to really have an account. And so they're going to need, it's going to need to be private key based and it's going to need to be on chain just for like procuring resources. When you tell your AI agents to go buy you a ticket to see Dune 2, they're going to probably need to send Fandango some USDC because they won't have access to your credit card. So that's actually a good thing. I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see the next billion users ironically be AI agents, not like humans clicking MetaMask.
No, that makes sense. And we had Fox Corporation and Polygon come on earlier this month and they talked about like the verification of...
Very familiar.
Yeah. Like deep fakes. Well,
yeah, I've chatted with that team a number of times.
Yeah. So about like making sure that my content is genuinely mine. And I know sometimes people will ask me like, oh, do you use like ChatGPT to write your articles? And I'm like, one, that's offensive. No. And two, like, I feel like they genuinely can't ask that because I've seen more like D-class news websites use AI to write articles. And it's kind of obvious because the AI isn't good enough yet. But like you said, in a few years' time, it very well could be good enough to replace journalists. And like, this is something I heard about years ago back when I was in college. My professors were like, the only thing that separates you from like a robot, at the time they were saying robot, AI wasn't like a hot term, is like that I could explain why something matters. And right now, robots really can't do that. So yeah, it's definitely a reality that I think a lot of news organizations have to face and all the other areas that you were talking about.
You remember just as well as I did, like a few months ago when the Cointelegraph intern
the whole debacle, about the spot Bitcoin ETF,
There's a great example where, like, in that case, I don't think there was like an AI agent involved or like a bad actor that hacked Cointelegraph, but you don't know where that content came from and you don't know if it came from real journalists.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, there were points when the spot Bitcoin ETF was happening and I was like, you know, hearing things from my sources and I would like tweet something out and I would have people that I know personally well DM me and be like, hacked or legit? Because they genuinely didn't know if it was me tweeting it. And it's like, everything that has come from my account has been tweeted by me. Like, thank God I haven't been hacked. But like, that's a real concern, you know?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that can move markets very quickly coming from a well-respected journalist.
Thank you. Well-respected journalist. I'll take it.
No, I'm not talking about you, of course. I'm talking about if there were one. I'm just kidding.
No, of course.
I'm referring to you.
Thank you. But I kind of wanted to talk about something that I remember Space and Time announced last year was a big development with OpenAI and blockchain data. How has that kind of evolved since? And like, what have you been working on that front?
Yeah. So we've been doing a lot of work with Microsoft Azure and with like the Azure AI Lab around saturating Azure with blockchain data and like loading every data point we have from every major chain to, like I said, to make that available to AI agents. And then furthermore, using Space and Time as a tamper-proof log of everything your LLM does. So every prompt you send to ChatGPT and every output you get back. Because down the road during litigation, during auditing, like for corporate finances, there's gonna be challenges, right? Where you not just wanna give the LLM a bunch of blockchain data to help it make decisions or trade on chain for you or send money on chain on your behalf or procure resources on chain. That's helpful. Like that's the whole like getting blockchain data into the LLM and providing context. But in terms of logging what the LLM does, logging every single one of Jacqueline's prompts and logging every one of the outputs, if you're comfortable sharing them, if you're comfortable having them logged, you know, it creates sort of a tamper-proof audit trail for reviewers, for litigators, and for auditors later that want to understand why certain decisions happen. And take that to the government level. Like, think about defense. Think about the DMV, right? If you have a DMV agent at the front desk that's kind of working with its AI agent pal to help you, I don't know, get your car renewed.
Sure.
And something goes wrong, you're going to be frustrated. You might get your own lawyers involved if something goes wrong. Maybe that's a bad example, but they're going to want some proof that the decisions that came back from the LLM went into the correct action. I hope that makes sense.
Do you kind of see this being adopted in the Web 2 world, or is this decentralized?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
This is ironically using blockchain security, using the technology and the cryptography of the blockchain world and applying it to something that's a generic use case that spans Web 2 and Web 3, right? This is like ZK proving what the LLM did, which is broadly applicable in government, defense, in finance, in social media, journalism. So it goes way beyond just Web 3. However, in terms of providing blockchain data to the LLM, I mean, that's just us getting the LLM context about what's happening on chain, which is very Web3 native.
Okay. So maybe on this front, and then just in general, like taking a step back from that, have there been any like specific use cases within like the past year or so that Space and Time has seen so far that has surprised even you?
I think nobody expected on-chain AI agents this earlier, like on-chain AI oracles. And we're starting to see some interesting projects raise very sizable rounds to bring LLMs on-chain for whatever crazy reason. And they have a bunch of use cases around DAO governance, around like NFT projects that have a life of their own, right? Imagine like, you know, your little Tamagotchi AI. And that's going to be fun. The question is, who's going to build something valuable? Those are like hackers tinkering away during a hackathon. Who's going to bring that to a billion-dollar scale? I mean, I don't mean billion dollars of TVL. I mean like billion-dollar scale in the traditional sense. So very excited about on-chain AI, but I truly have no idea what it leads to and what kind of crazy hackathon projects are going to come out of it.
Yeah. I guess my last major question for you, Scott, and you kind of said you don't know what it leads to, but I'm going to have you like take out your crystal ball for a second is like,
sure.
Where do you see blockchains and AIs going in the long term? Like, or I guess like, what is your hope?
I do feel confident I can answer this without even saying this is my hope. I'll tell you what I do know for sure.
Perfect. Let's do it.
For sure, I know this. Your agent framework that you will have assisting you very soon, and when I say soon, within 2 years, will primarily need to transact on chain. It'll primarily need to procure resources for you using stablecoins or even Ethereum. And the reason for that is credit card companies will not open up a credit card on behalf of an AI agent framework. There's no trust there. You can't overdraft. You can't go bill them. And they certainly can't go try to bill you for the crazy things your little AI agent did. And it leads to way too many regulatory compliance issues. Therefore, what happens? It all goes on chain and creates more transactions and more tokenization on chain. I'm not saying AI agents need to trade Ethereum and be like liquid restake farming, like yield farming or something. But what I'm talking about is them procuring resources. Like when you say, hey, go build me a cool little website for my side project. Let me know when it's done. How do they go procure a hosting service to host your website? So that's one area, and that's coming, and that's inevitable. Mm. The other area, which I alluded to 5 minutes ago, was deepfakes. Creating like watermarked content using blockchain technology as a tamper-proof audit trail of where that watermarked content came from. The Fox example. That's like the tip of the spear, right? That you need some kind of decentralized, but globally always available database, which is the blockchain, of whose content came from where, what's legit, and everyone needs to access it. It can't be a monopoly. It can't be centralized, right? OpenAI themselves can't be the proprietors of a database of which journalists are creating which content, right? It has to be something that's owned by the community and operated by the community and always on and always available that can't be censored. The second you have a centralized entity that has the capability to censor the database of where content came from, such as your own journalist work, then of course they can manipulate that. They can censor and manipulate. So it has to be decentralized. It's going to have to be on chain. There's no way around it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Scott, this has been super interesting, and I feel like we could talk about this for hours. but unfortunately we can't. We can when we stop recording. But can you leave us with a piece of advice, maybe from the conversation we had or something that you carry with you throughout your career?
One piece of advice that I would have is keep your cool when things are going poorly. It's something I struggle with, frankly, and I'm getting better at it as time goes on. I'm like learning to find my inner Buddha while the markets go crazy, yeah. While, you know, engineers maybe are slightly behind on a deadline and it's an important deadline, or, you know, maybe a important VC that we thought was going to participate in our round backs out and another one comes in. You know, you've been through cycles. You've watched
right.
plenty of cycles that made your heart, you got a lot of heartburn and you kept your cool and you just kept working on, you kept your head down and you kept working on the things that you're passionate about. You kept telling stories about incredible projects in the Web3 space. And now the bull's back and you can relax again. The only advice that I'd have is like, keep your cool, man. Things are never quite as bad as they seem in the moment. And then by the next day, usually you realize, okay, you know, that wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. No, I love that advice. I'm sure our founder listeners can resonate as well as just market participants. So yeah, Scott, thank you so much again for coming on.
And anybody with a bag right now today can resonate.
Oh yeah, definitely. We could see their transactions at some point, right? Scott, thank you again for coming on. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast. Let's do it again sometime.
We'll be back next week with conversations around what's going on in the wild world of Web3 with top players in the crypto ecosystem. You can keep up with us on Spotify, Apple Music, or your favorite pod platform, and subscribe to our companion newsletter, also called Chain Reaction. Links to the newsletter and stories we talked about can be found in our show notes, and be sure to follow us at @Chain_Reaction on Twitter. Chain Reaction is hosted by myself, Jacqueline Melanick, and produced by Maggie Stamets, with assistance from Yashad Kulkarni and editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and Henry Picavet manages TechCrunch audio products. Thanks for listening in. See you next time.